The Boulder Tech Podcast is presented by Boulder Startup Week 2019 title sponsor, Techstars. At the core, Techstars is a company founded by entrepreneurs for entrepreneurs. With more than 300,000 alumni and 10,000 mentors across 150 countries, Techstars is a worldwide network that helps entrepreneurs succeed. To learn more, go to techstars.com. Welcome to the Boulder Tech Podcast. I'm your host, Joel Davis. This is one of 20 interviews recorded in a pop-up backroom studio at Dojo 4 during the 10th annual Boulder Startup Week. When it started in 2009, Boulder Startup Week was the first event of its kind anywhere. Now, Startup Weeks are held around the world. It's a great example of Boulder's position on the leading edge of tech and the future. Our guest for episode 46 is Lisa Buffo, founder and CEO of the Cannabis Marketing Association, a Denver-based organization focused on education and best practices for cannabis industry communications professionals. Lisa and I cover a lot of ground, including challenges to cannabis marketing, both legally and image-wise, the restrictive laws around cannabis marketing and how they disrupt basic commerce, as well as efforts to destigmatize the substance, Colorado's place in the pot pecking order now that legalization is spreading across the country, and the often forgotten point that cannabis, at its most basic, should be a source of joy. All of that and more as the Boulder Tech Podcast speaks with the Cannabis Marketing Association's Lisa Buffo. I know the cannabis is a rapidly shifting landscape. What's the current state of the industry?
So the current state of the industry is it is growing very quickly. The industry has been growing at a 35% compound annual growth rate. And as of 2016, the global cannabis industry was worth about $9.6 billion. And it's projected to be worth $150 billion by 2025 globally.
Wow.
Yeah. So massive, massive growth as legalization marches on, both here in the United States and globally.
How many states are recreationally legal now?
So 10 for recreational and 32 plus DC and Puerto Rico for medical.
And are there more states with this issue coming up on the ballot this year?
Yeah, there's a few. It actually looked like New Jersey and New York were going to pass legalization through the legislature in March. That's actually been stalled due to opposition and also some debate over language in the bill. So there are several states that may legalize it this year, but we're not sure yet.
Do you think that this horse has left the barn and that any resistance really is just the old guard before it eventually gives away to what's coming next?
Absolutely. I do think the horse is out of the barn. Even if there was a federal crackdown or anything like that, Colorado, for example, passed Amendment 64 as a ballot initiative. So the states could sue the federal government and still say this is our right. And that would take years in court and a while for things to really get rolled back. And I just think with how they're almost 70% of the population, I believe the exact stat is 64%, lives in an area where cannabis is legalized in some form. So it's pretty much out there. And if you think about it, 32 states for medical, 10 for adult use, that's a lot. I think if it was going to happen, it would have already. But since it hasn't, I think we're pretty safe to say that things are moving forward. I would be pretty surprised to see any type of rollback come into place, but it's not impossible.
Is any remaining resistance to widening legalization, is that mainly just, again, old preconceptions about marijuana dominating the conversation, or are there other really kind of legitimate reasons to think about things before just saying, yeah, let's legalize this?
So yes, definitely the old resistance and the stigma around, you know, cannabis has been illegal for about 80 years now. So that's generations of propaganda and misunderstanding that the industry is still fighting. And as long as it's a Schedule I controlled substance and illegal under the federal government, which means it has absolutely no medical use at all, you know, we're still fighting against something. So there is also the perception, but also it comes down to money. I mean, cannabis is a really disruptive $5 plant disrupting multi-billion dollar industries from alcohol to healthcare to pharmaceuticals. So We are seeing things shift, but it is disrupting the way that business as usual has been done in several other industries.
You had mentioned before we started this conversation that you're going to DC later this week for lobby days.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so that's with the National Cannabis Industry Association. They're one of the larger industry trade groups that advocates for reform for cannabis laws and policy at the federal level. And every year around this time in May, annually, industry representatives can go to DC with them, and they will schedule meetings with you and your local representatives or representatives with where you do business and talk about cannabis reform and what laws we want to see passed. It's my first time. I have not done much lobbying myself, so I'm really excited to go and learn how that process works.
Do you have a particular area that you will be advocating for?
I'm not sure yet. So they sort of assign it to you based on the rep that you're meeting with and the times that you're available. And I don't have that information yet, but my expertise is around the marketing and branding side of things.
So let's talk about that. What are the major challenges to cannabis marketing, both legally and image-wise?
Several. That's a great question. I'm glad you asked. Well, the first thing from a compliance perspective is that the rules vary from city to city and state to state. So Boulder's rules may be different than Denver's rules for marketing and advertising. And Colorado's are different than California's. For example, in California, you'll see billboards for cannabis brands all over the state. You won't see one in Colorado here. So when it comes to being a functional marketer in these brands that are trying to expand nationwide, you have to know a lot more about where are your products being sold, what are the rules and regulations in those locations, and what does that mean for your company. So on the compliance side, there's a lot to learn. There's a lot of jargon and legalese in the marketing language that as a functional marketer may not be what you're used to reading and understanding. And then also, because it's still federally illegal when it comes to the tech platforms, marketing's basically restricted. So Google won't let you advertise, Facebook won't let you advertise, Instagram won't let you advertise. And even if you're just posting organically on platforms like Instagram, they're still known for shutting down accounts of licensed businesses because they're not friendly with cannabis content yet. So that produces a lot of restrictions when it comes to marketing. But also there's a tax code called 280E, which comes from a Reagan era, I believe it was a Supreme Court decision, but there was a cocaine drug dealer who tried to deduct his business expenses from his tax returns. And at that point, the federal government and the IRS said, well, if you're dealing Schedule I controlled substances, you can't do that because you're not a legitimate business. So that code still applies to legal cannabis businesses today. So legal cannabis businesses can't deduct normal business expenses from their taxes. So they're often paying ridiculously high tax rates, sometimes up to 70%, because they can't deduct salaries, they can't deduct marketing advertising costs as this come in, office supplies, and so on and so forth. So marketing and advertising, because of this, is not seen from a financial perspective as an investment because it is not a deductible cost. So companies aren't putting in the money that you would see in other industries into marketing and advertising, which also makes it harder to destigmatize and portray cannabis positively.
Is it basically the fact that it's still federally illegal that's the main bottleneck here?
Correct.
Once that happens, then it's going to be a lot easier. The businesses can make better margins, invest more in marketing, deduct their expenses, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes.
So what's your prognostication on when that's going to happen?
That's a great question. I get asked that a lot. And really, I don't know, and nobody knows, even if they tell you that they know. I mean, it's a bipartisan issue, so it could... The federal government could decide to pass this should they make it a priority. I know they're busy dealing with a lot of other issues currently, so I don't know if it's up there, but hopefully I'll find out more after lobby days. But right now, it's a guess.
Yeah.
But I actually think it is sooner on the radar than people might be expecting just because things are moving so fast at this point.
Is there a concern that because of the inability of small businesses in the cannabis space to deduct those expenses that any other business can deduct, are a lot of the smaller mom and pop businesses and shops feeling the pressure and in danger of being swallowed up by bigger cannabis chains because they can't keep up and they're just sort of hanging on until things change at the federal level?
Absolutely. And we've already seen that here in Colorado. Even for the Colorado product brands and dispensaries, we've seen a lot of consolidation because it is really expensive to run a cannabis business. And then there's even these phantom taxes where insurance is more expensive because you're high risk. Even getting a bank account is really expensive. I've talked to brands who pay $3,000 a month just in fees to have the bank account. So there's all these other expenses that come with working in a highly regulated and gray market space when we're talking about the federal landscape. So yeah, it is really those with money who are able to sort of keep up and manage. That makes it a lot harder for the smaller shops to compete, particularly in saturated markets like Colorado, where, you know, we've been doing adult use here since 2014. So we've seen that growth and we've seen things sort of level out. And I definitely think the smaller businesses are feeling it and that will happen in these other states as well.
Now that legalization is slowly but surely spreading, where is Colorado in terms of national perception as far as a cannabis-friendly state? I know, you know, when we legalized originally, I know there were a big boost in tourism. People were coming here just for that. Is that quieting down at all, or is Colorado still a pretty major hotspot?
A little bit of both. So I think in cannabis tourism, it is quieting down because it's no longer the only place you can go for adult use. I mean, California is a beautiful state as well, and they also have adult use sales now. So if you were planning a vacation, now we've got more options to consider from out-of-state tourists. But also, I mean, I've been living here since 2014 and I moved here for the industry. And it also, at least on the ground, feels like the secret has gotten out about Colorado and the mountains and the sunshine and legal cannabis. And so I also think people are coming here both for tourist reasons and moving here for reasons beyond just legal cannabis. But I think legal cannabis did put Colorado in a spotlight in a way that it wasn't before.
And do you feel like the green rush is still hot, or is it kind of quiet?
Oh, yeah.
Down?
I think we're still at the very tippy top of the iceberg. I mean, when we're talking about the global landscape, there's still only a few countries that have legal cannabis. And I mean, the US doesn't. Canada was really the first one to pass adult use at that federal level. And the biggest companies in the industry are publicly traded and Canadian based. And they're multi-billion dollar companies now. So we're just starting to see really the bigger players develop and evolve, and a lot could still change, but we're still very, very early.
What kind of companies do you work with as the CEO and founder of the Cannabis Marketing Association?
So our main customers are the brands, the retail stores, and the marketing agencies. One of the problems I found, I actually used to work in marketing in this space, which is why I founded and started this organization, is there's often a lot of miscommunication between the agencies and the brands. A lot of marketing agencies are great at marketing and great at what they do, but they may not understand cannabis and they may not understand the marketing regulations that are very important to know. I've seen a few examples with members and clients who, you know, have run into trouble because their agency or the out-of-house team that they hired did not understand the unique rules and regulations. And marketing and advertising violations are some of the most severe. So if you do violate those rules, depending at that level, here in Colorado, the Marijuana Enforcement Division can slap you with a big fine or come and shut you down and that's it. So it's really important that the agencies understand. But also, because we've had 80 years of prohibition and propaganda, we're fighting a stigma. And so you may have a really well-designed, fancy campaign with nice colors and great messaging, but if someone viewing that still thinks it's a drug, it's not going to work. You have to talk to them and meet them where they're at and educate. And so that burden falls on the industry to educate, to open up the perception, portray it positively, and bring new consumers to the table in a way that is inviting and friendly and has integrity to it. And so we're helping teach people about that.
So it seems like then a lot of effort for any marketing campaign, you're marketing whatever the product is, a vape pen, say. There's the marketing of the actual product, why this pen is better than that one, but also why it's okay to even be comfortable looking at this ad in the first place and thinking about purchasing a vape pen and wondering about it. That educational part, that's an aspect in every campaign, it would seem.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, if you've never consumed cannabis before, you know, how does it affect my body? Do I vape? Do I dab? Do I smoke flower? Do I use a tincture? Even on the packaging, you have milligrams, you have percentages, you have ratios. I mean, it's really overwhelming if you're not familiar with that language. And I work in the industry and I'm still learning new things. So there's a lot of education around this many milligrams might mean this for you. And a 2-to-1 CBD to THC ratio means this. So there is a lot of education that has to be conveyed, and only so much can be talked about on a little brand package.
Do you have any marketing experience prior to working in the cannabis biz?
Yeah, so I was actually working for tech startups. I worked for a few business accelerators and was helping SaaS companies and some direct-to-consumer brands market their products. So I have a tech operations and marketing background, but I was really drawn to cannabis for many, many reasons, but there's so much passion and excitement in this space, and it really is so disruptive and fun. I love working in this industry.
Is it a hard business to break into?
Yes, because at this point, now it's somewhat safe to get into. I mean, a few years ago, even then, it was still a little risque as far as the greater perception of things. So now it almost feels like everybody's trying to get in, and industry tends to hire within the industry because there is so much you need to know, so much you need to understand about the plant and the science and how it affects your body and all those terms and what they mean, but also the regulations, which are hundreds of pages of documents. So oftentimes you see the industry hire from within. So breaking in, there's a level of education that you need to have that's often going to be self-taught in order for the chance to learn on the job.
What are some of the companies you're most proud to have worked with and or had the greatest successes with?
Oh, that's a great question. There are several brands. So here in Colorado, there is a retail dispensary called Higher Grade down in Denver. They have both a medical store and an adult use store. Their grow is connected to a brand, same owners, Veritas Cannabis, and they just have really fantastic product and use all natural methods to grow it. And they just have a high quality product and a really pleasant retail experience. Every time I go there and talk to their bud tenders, they're informed, they're educated, and they're able to meet me where I'm at. And I've also brought my mom in, who is not nearly as educated as I am in cannabis, and she's able to be comfortable there. So I really like their retail experience and the way in which they grow and produce their cannabis. There's also a brand out of California, Garden Society. They make edibles that are just absolutely delicious. It was like chocolate with chili infused. It's beautiful, and it has this female aesthetic that is definitely friendly for your mom. And the founders are two just awesome entrepreneurial women out in the Bay Area who are doing really great things.
What are some of the innovations in cannabis that you're most excited about?
So it's interesting. I've seen a lot of really great developments on the packaging side, where brands are getting a lot more colorful and clever and creative and good messaging in their packaging, and getting away from sort of the weedy leaves on everything to really high design. But the downside to that is packaging is also waste, and this industry does produce a ton of waste because there are strict requirements around packaging being, you know, child resistant and, you know, making sure that things are kept safe and secure. So great design is coming out, but there's also the downside of the waste, which is a broader issue that the industry needs to address. But I understand the roadblocks these companies have because they're trying to stay compliant with the packaging, but also communicate their brand message and help educate all in one little space.
A lot of needles to thread.
Yeah, a lot to balance.
What do you see in the next, say, 5 years for the cannabis business?
I would imagine in 5 years we will have federal legalization. And my belief is that, I mean, I'm biased saying this, but my belief is that those who have put thought and resources into marketing and advertising will be the market leaders. That's what happened with alcohol prohibition as well. Once alcohol prohibition ended, those brands that were there and ready are the leaders today, and have held that ground. So I do see that happening. I also see cannabis following that of consumer packaged goods, where there will be big national brands that have advertisements on billboards and all these places where you sort of see mainstream ads. and that of the beer industry, where you will have the Coors of the world and you will have the Oscar Blues of the world that, you know, appeal to a more smaller local craft audience. So I think because cannabis, it's so complex in the sense that it's medical on one side, it's wellness in the middle, and it's adult use on the end. It's this whole spectrum of uses that there's going to be a lot of room for a lot of leaders.
So less than 5 years away, maybe do our first cannabis Super Bowl commercial.
That would be really cool. I hope so.
Bringing it back to a more local level, how connected are cannabis companies that you've worked with, or just in general, with the Boulder startup community at large? Is it a bubble within a bubble? Is there a lot of integration between them, a lot of conversation, or cannabis is just its own thing?
A little bit of both. I have found Boulder to be very tech-oriented. I actually used to work for a cannabis tech company, and I found when I was doing more the ancillary tech product marketing to be a bit more integrated with cannabis, because that seems to sort of be the common language here than the brands themselves. But Boulder's interesting. So Pearl Street, for example, you won't see any cannabis dispensaries at street level. They're either above or below ground, because that was one of the rules that they wrote in, was that you can't have any street level dispensaries on Pearl Street, even though it's a highly pedestrian, I mean, one of the most trafficked places in the whole region. So that's sort of one of those things, like, we welcome the industry, but sort of.
Just kind of hang out in the background just there.
Be a little bit more subtle. So I think things like that sort of help show the relationship between the community and the industry. But the overall Boulder startup community, both in and outside of cannabis, has been really great and welcoming, I think, to the industry as a whole.
How much does Boulder's reputation as a sort of a hippie paradise, as maybe outdated as that reputation might be at this point, have to do with the surge in marijuana companies based here versus the simple fact that we're a rapidly growing tech hub and Colorado happened to be one of the first states to legalize?
What I've noticed is real estate has gotten really expensive in Boulder, and it feels like Boulder's hit this rapid growth curve in the last 5 or 6 years, where even the companies that had licenses before adult use, when it was just medical, were able to really be established here. But I think real estate's just gotten so expensive. And I mean, to operate a grow or a production facility requires a lot of space. So I've actually seen more of those brands either in Denver or sort of on the outskirts of town, where it's a bit more affordable. So I think the hippie paradise history of Boulder is there, but it's just gentrified so quickly, and money has come in so quickly, that I think it makes more sense for the tech companies to be headquartered, you know, right downtown than the cannabis brands.
Do you see, because the issue of rising real estate and limited space is not just Boulder, it's Denver, and really the whole sort of general Front Range area. Do you see any other places in Colorado that may be emerging as hotspots for the marijuana business?
I would still say it's Denver, mostly because 90% of the population lives in the Front Range for Colorado. And most of those businesses and dispensaries are in sort of the Denver metro area proper. So there's over 500 licensed dispensaries in Colorado, which is more than the number of Starbucks and McDonald's combined. So that sort of is saying something. There are a few dispensaries in the resort towns and the mountain towns along I-70. And those prices are a bit higher than the prices in the Front Range for cannabis, because they're appealing to that tourist crowd and it is further to get there from a supply chain perspective. But I would still say Denver is the hub.
What have I missed? Is there anything that you want people to know about that I haven't asked you about?
We talk a lot in the marketing world about destigmatizing cannabis, which is super important. But I also like to spin that in the positive and think that we should also be portraying cannabis positively. It has tons of wellness benefits. It has tons of medical benefits, but it's also fun. And that's something I think our world could use a lot more of, is to have this conversation around. I think as marketers, we're almost a little afraid to talk about, it's okay to get really high and laugh and enjoy time out with your friends and pass a joint and have a social circle with it, is that cannabis does promote fun and promote joy. And I think joy is really important to overall wellness and something I would like to see more people sort of talk about and own who do use it for those reasons, is the joy and positivity that it can bring.
As I've heard said, when was the last time you saw a couple of stoners get into a drunken brawl?
Right. Yeah.
Statistically speaking, has it bared out that it's really the impacts that might be perceived as negative? Where are those? Like, in terms of teen usage and driving while intoxicated and that sort of thing. What can you say about that?
It depends on your level of experience with cannabis. There are people who come to me and say, oh, you know, I smoked once and I got super paranoid and freaked out and it was not for me and never again. And that is a very valid experience to honor for that person. Cannabis isn't for everybody, but there is such an education gap that what I say is try different methods, try different dosage levels, understand why you're using it and why it might work for you. Maybe smoking a really heady sativa joint isn't right for you, but a low dose edible or tincture is for what you need. In terms of driving and teen use, actually having a legalized market cuts out the black market. So it's much harder for children to get access to it because they can't just walk into a dispensary and get it from their friends at school. And as far as driving goes, I mean, there is a base level of common sense that we should all have, right? Like, we legally shouldn't drink and drive, and that's why we have limits around, is it 0.08 here in Colorado?
Something like that.
Something like that. That's what it was in Ohio when I grew up, which says, you know, you can drink and drive, but only to a certain extent, but the law is telling you to use common sense there. And with cannabis is the same thing. Don't drink and drive, don't consume and drive. If you need to consume, get yourself really comfortable at home and do it with some friends.
Have you heard any statistics about actual like rise or fall in marijuana related traffic accidents or a rise in teen usage just across the board in a bigger picture kind of way?
Yeah. So yes, I have heard those things in the media. I can't speak to the actual numbers, but I did see recently something like emergency room visits were up. And I think it also, whenever you see those statistics, you need to look at the whole picture. Someone can go to the emergency room with cannabis in their system and alcohol in their system and other things in their system. And also because maybe they have had an experience and they're not sure what is going on with them and are confused and trying to figure that out. I have seen those statistics. I can't speak to them in detail without those numbers right in front of me, but I do think it's important to look at the broader picture. Like, if driving accidents are up, well, how much has the population also increased here in the last 5 years? So is that going up as a relative percentage, or is it really tied to cannabis use? So I just think anytime I see those statistics, both positive or negative, that it's important to look at the whole picture.
Okay. One last question. Do you see, I know there was talk, I don't know if it was on the recent ballot in Denver, about having like cannabis social clubs. Mm-hmm. Where are we on that timeline?
So they are talking about it. And I would have to refresh, but I believe they just did pass some more rules and regulations around it. There is at least one licensed club in Denver, and I believe a few others that are applying. But I mean, the analogy I like to make is what would the alcohol industry be if there was only liquor stores and no bars? Like, mm-hmm. what would our culture look like if you could only purchase it but did not have a place to socially and safely consume it, where at bars, the bartender can cut you off, you know, at a consumption lounge, that's a safe place to do it. And what we're finding here is, particularly with the tourists, they're coming to Colorado, they're buying cannabis, but you can only consume in private property. And if you're staying in a hotel, they have pretty big fines for smoking in your room, anything in there. So then they have nowhere to go, and, you know, maybe they go outside or they just don't know what to do with it. So I think it's important. And part of that educational aspect is, say you are trying cannabis for your first time, wouldn't it be great to do that at a lounge where, if you should start to have an experience you don't like or you don't know what's going on, somebody can talk to you and help explain that and have informational material, or you can laugh with a bunch of strangers that you just met. But I think the social consumption aspect is important for building a healthy culture around it, but also building in that educational component that really comes with experience and trial by doing, than just reading a pamphlet and saying, this might happen to you if you try this.
Anything else you'd like to add about anything?
I actually read Radfeld's book, Startup Communities, and that was partly, if not largely, what drew me here. I grew up in Cleveland outside the Midwest, and then I spent some time in the East Coast in the DC area. And I just really love Colorado and Boulder, and I'm so happy to be a part of this community.
Great.
Yeah.
Lisa Buffo from the Cannabis Marketing Association. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me.
That was Lisa Buffo, founder and CEO of the Cannabis Marketing Association. Learn more at thecannabismarketingassociation.com and follow them on Twitter at Canna Marketing. Episode number 46 of the Boulder Tech Podcast is presented by Boulder Startup Week, new to Boulder track sponsor, the Downtown Boulder Partnership. The Boulder Tech Podcast is made possible in part by Boulder Startup Week Platinum sponsors Honey, Matter, and Zayo. We're also supported by Glider, a Colorado-based community movement and nonprofit that produces Boulder's Ignite and TEDx events, as well as Boulder Startup Week. Learn more and consider a donation at glider.com. Thanks to Dojo 4 for providing space for our podcast studio, and to KGNU Community Radio for recording gear and studio usage. Our intro music is by Echo Deck. Hear more at echodeck.com. That's ECCODEK. Our outro music is by Earthrise Sound System. You'll find them at earthrisesoundsystem.com. The Boulder Tech Podcast is produced by me, Joel Davis. Your feedback, criticisms, comments, and guest suggestions are welcome. Reach me at joel@dojo4.com. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here next time on the Boulder Tech Podcast.